didn't get a chance to talk to about Hello and welcome to Snark Squad Pod, a media podcast full of friendship, feelings, and snark. I'm Nicole Sweeney.
My name is Marines.
And this week, we are not joined by anyone because it is time for our now annual media year in review episode. This is where we look back on all the things that we talked about here on this podcast this year, and also all the things that we watched or read or listened to and never got a chance to discuss on this podcast. Sort of a catch-all for all of our media from 2019. Or I guess I keep saying this year, but it's now, as you are listening to this, 2020. But we are recording this on the 31st. So since there is no did you like it for us to start with,
did you like 2019?
Yeah. Okay. So our usual question is, did you like it? So I have to start there. That's where we start.
It's the rules.
That's the rules. The rules is, did you like it? So I don't know, man. Did you like the stuff, the media of 2019? What's your general sense? How do you think you're going to look back on this year of media?
I feel like that it was a pretty good year of media. I think the real thing that's happening to me as I get older is that I'm getting not less critical, but I'm getting less, I don't know, I'm more willing to love things. Mm-hmm. Even when I feel like, oh, I see all of the flaws in this and I can talk about them, I'm still like, I don't know, man, I enjoyed that. I don't know if it is because I'm getting older or because the world is getting like worse that I'm finding more joy in fiction. But that is primarily the feeling I will take from 2019, is that I feel like I learned a lot about myself as a consumer, and that this project and like Snark Squad in general and starting Cool and then Home work really has shifted how I view myself as a consumer.
I feel like that is also the experience that I have had this year. I also think that this was a year, like if I were to describe my media experiences this year, I leaned much more into re-consuming things than I ever had before.
That's so exciting.
This was a big year of that for me. Just, I don't know, rereading things. I recently reread The Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo solely because like I was looking at things to read and nothing was appealing to me. And I just wanted something comfortable, like something that I loved, something that I knew that I enjoyed. And I think related to that and related to everything that you've just said, I tend to go into fewer experiences that I don't know that I'm going to love. Like I don't have the energy to go out of my way to make the time or the space for something that I don't expect to enjoy.
I mean, I still do that. I think I'm generally more willing to do that always, just like in the dynamic of who you are and who I am. I've always been the one like, come on, let's do this terrible thing. And you're like, do I have to? But I still do that. But I think
we know that it's terrible.
Yeah. I file that differently in my brain. And also, like, I'm better at picking out what my current mood is for media. Like, do I want to reread something because it's comfort media? Do I want to hate read something because it's fun? Do I want to go into fantasy? Navigating that becomes easier.
I think for me, it's more that I've gotten to a place where like hate reading is just not that much fun for me. I will say the big sort of exception to that is the spaces where we have kind of big projects around it. Like that does make it different because it's less about the reading and more about working on something together, then mm-hmm. like the media becomes so incidental to the point for me that like, yeah. Okay, fine. There's like this tiny little piece of it, this little thing that I don't particularly enjoy building towards this larger thing that I very much love. And so it's like finding that sort of balance. But I didn't really answer my own question. Did I like the media of 2019? I don't know, man. I guess so.
Yeah. Highs and lows.
Highs and lows. You know, there were some real highs and lows. So let's start with the highs then. What were your favorite media things? And specifically, let's start with the media that we have consumed for the podcast. So what were your favorite podcast media things of 2019?
My answer is always going to skew, I think, towards TV. So the first things that came into my head were both TV things. So The Americans, just I look back at that experience of binge watching that over literal over a week, really, because I started watching it too slow. I was like, look at me, I'm starting early. And then I was like, oh my God, I have most of this left to do. And it was really a surreal experience because it was just like watching The Americans all the time. But mm-hmm. It was such a good show. So well acted. And I've genuinely had like thoughts about, okay, when will I reconsume this? When can I go back to this story? Because it left such an impression on me. And then in that same regard, Fleabag, I think, was excellent and has just something that I think about often as well. It was fun to talk about, fun to consume, and just ended on such a wonderful, complete, full note. And both those stories, it's not very often that you get TV that ends in such a like complete, full, satisfying way. And right. Both of those shows did.
So I am looking back over this list and there are quite a few favorite things that we talked about that were things that were already my favorite things. So The Americans yes. is one of them.
Like, correct.
That's high on the list for me because it's a thing that I already loved. And, you know, we read all three of the Historic Materials books this year for the podcast. We also read Emma for the podcast this year. So all of those things were kind of known quantities of favorite things going into this year. We also did an episode on The Good Place, which again was like a thing that I already loved before this year. So of things that were actually new to me this year, which I realize knocks out like, I don't know, 15 of the episodes from this year, I would agree that Fleabag is really the standout. I mean, and I actually think it is genuinely a standout, sort of independent of the comparing it to all of these things that were already established favorites for me, but it's very high on the list. I also have to add Unicorn Store to that list because I have rewatched that movie several times since then because it filled my heart with just so much joy. It made me so happy. It quickly became another one of those sort of go-to comfort watches for me. Even, you know, after basically just the one, two, I think I maybe watched it twice before we even talked about it. But even after just those viewings, it like very quickly came to occupy that kind of space in my heart and in my feelings. And so Unicorn Store and Fleabag are probably at the top of my list of new to me things that we talked about on the podcast this year. I will also say, The Americans. One, obviously, it's always exciting when, you know, you bring somebody your favorite thing and they're like, yes, I love this too. Uh-huh. But also, I am glad that you brought it up because I do think that there are all sorts of ways in which that show just sort of sits with me. And it was a rewatch for me this time around, but I still feel like I had a similar experience almost of like, I am thinking about, like, I think about it a lot in a way that is not necessarily true of even other shows that I really love. Like, it just, I don't know, it's just sort of like low level in the back of my brain.
I think it captures a lot of the things that, like, big themes and tropes that we talk about, so that it's always like a shining example of like, look at how The Americans did it. It did it so well. And because it is such a family drama and, you know, that family is at the core of it and they, like, I don't know, were their way into your hearts, that is kind of like the lingering feeling, is like those characters and that family really remains in your feelings and your memories. And I don't know, Carrie Russell just is amazing. It's the main takeaway for me. I love her so much.
Okay, so having led with our sort of podcast favorites, what were some of your non-podcast favorites? What are the other things that you loved from this year that we haven't gotten a chance to talk about?
This is always a great portion of the podcast for me because I'm like, that's funny, me consuming media outside of content. I watched any TV shows that were not for the podcast. And I think, well, The Witcher, which we're going to talk about this year in 2020. So I won't like spoil you with all my feelings there, but I watched it all in one day when it came out. Other than that, I honestly don't think I watched any other TV shows that were not podcast shows. So it's all books.
The Voice.
Oh, The Voice. I didn't even finish The Voice. I did watch The Voice, and that was because Nicole was like, guess what I'm doing? I'm having feelings while watching The Voice. And I was like, wow, that sounds good. And then I also did that thing. So I watched most of the current season of The Voice. I still have to finish it up. And it was perfect for what I needed, which was like low stress, watching Kelly Clarkson be funny and cute and have a lot of feelings. It was great. Other than that, no other TV shows. As far as books, I think I'm December 31st, as we mentioned, as we're recording this, and I will finish two more books today that I'm in the middle of, which will bring me to a grand total of 96 books for the year. I'm like super bummed that I will not reach 100.
Okay, but that's like a lot of books.
I know. It's the first time I've ever read this many books. I usually, 72 is my goal, and I usually make about 80 on a good year. Last year was like 56, to be honest. It was a bad year. But I almost read 100 books this year. It's wild. So of those that we haven't talked about on the podcast, Catch and Kill by Ronan Farrow is a nonfiction one that has like really stayed with me. Ronan Farrow is one of the reporters that basically broke the Harvey Weinstein story, and he talks about his experience of researching and putting together the story and the ways that NBC, where he was working during the time, tried to block the story and tried to keep him from going forward with it. And then taking the story, I believe, to The New Yorker, and then getting it published to there. And then Ronan Farrow is also Mia Farrow's son. So he talks about his personal experience with Woody Allen and that whole deal and how it affected his family, and then how it also like feeds into his reporting. It's just a really, really interesting, intricate, heartbreaking piece of reporting itself. And if you listen to it on audiobook, which I did, which is also part of the reason that I've been able to read so much, is like listening to audiobooks has been life-saving. He reads it, Ronan does. And so getting to hear him tell the story in his own voice, which is one of my favorite things, nonfiction read by the author, was really powerful. And I keep telling people, like I keep recapping the story to other people because it just made such an impact on me. And like, that's my way of telling them to read it, is then immediately telling them everything that happens in the book. But it's just because I don't know, something about this. I mean, it's obviously a very heavy subject matter, and it comes with content warnings for sexual assault. He very much, he goes into detail with some of the things that happened with Matt Lauer, as well as Harvey. So definitely content warnings there. And it is a very heavy subject. And I think I walked away from it ultimately feeling hopeful because of the women who stepped up and said their truth and spoke about their stories. But it did very much take me in some times of being very mindful of the ways that systems are broken. And, you know, there were some dark times in there. Uh-huh. But in general, the story itself is just so important. It's like one of those ones that you almost have to read, or at least that's how I felt. So that was definitely one of my favorites of the year.
So I, of course, watched a lot of TV outside of for the podcast.
Sure.
This is related to The Witcher, but the other sort of obvious like cheat, a thing that we are discussing on the podcast. It's going to be the next episode of the podcast, but obviously the His Dark Materials series came out this year, and I watched all of that, and I will also withhold all of my feelings until we have that conversation.
But it was so good.
Spoilers. God.
Sorry.
I watched Killing Eve this year, and I don't know if it's one of my favorites. It's a show that I have really like strange and conflicted feelings about, and I go back and forth between thinking that I really want to discuss it on the podcast and also thinking like, no, I never want to discuss this on the podcast. I could watch Jodie Comer just do things for hours on end, like independent of anything else. But her and Sandra Oh are both truly incredible on that show. Independent of my conflicted feelings about the show itself, the two of them are truly phenomenal. Something that you left out, but we started recapping Nancy Drew. So,
oh yeah,
the CW, well, Nancy Drew. Yeah, I understand that that's for Snark Squad, but it's not a podcast thing.
I know. So I watch a ton of TV for Snark Squad.
Yeah. But we haven't talked about most of that stuff here on the podcast, if it's being talked about on the site. But anyway, New Nancy Drew, which I bring up mostly because it reminds me that one of my other favorite shows started last year, but I freaking love the Charmed reboot. It is so, for lack of a better word, so charming and delightful. Like, I just, of things that I watch weekly, it is one of the things that I'm always the most excited to be like, oh, I have a new Charmed episode. So I don't know, man. I think that some of it is to kind of revisit the point that you made at the top about getting to a place where you're more willing to enjoy things. Like, by all means, there are things about this show that are, I don't know, cheesy and over the top and whatever. But like, I don't know. I love it. It's cheesy in all of the ways that are like most suited to my personal enjoyment. You know what I mean? Like the even its flaws are things that are at worst flaws that I am more inclined to overlook. And at best are flaws that I'm inclined to be like, yeah, but I kind of like that part too. So I have been consistently delighted by the new Charmed. There are probably other things that I watched in the first half of the year that I am forgetting that I also loved, but though that's the list that comes to mind right now.
I'm still in season one of Charmed because I'm going slowly since I'm recapping. And I think we're at like a hand, like maybe like 10 episodes in or something like that in the first season. But it is after a handful of episodes that I felt like it really found its stride. And I was like, oh my God, I love this. And I sent Nicole messages to that effect. Like, I am really enjoying, like genuinely enjoying the show. And I feel like it's one of those things that we've talked about here with other things that maybe weren't favorites, but that were good experiences for me, of things that we covered on the podcast, like Last Christmas and like Unicorn Store and like Charlie's Angels, that were fun and just also like knew what they were and did that thing well.
Yeah.
And so Charmed is like cheesy in a way, but it knows that. And it really leans into this idea of like three young girls who face things that you would expect girls this age or women this age to face. And so it just knows that, and it leans into it so well that it's entertaining and it is charming and it's a little magical. So I don't know, that show's great. I love it.
Oh, I completely forgot my two actual favorite shows of the year, which were Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, which had its finale this year, and then The OA, which I watched all of the first season just before the second season came out, and then like rewatched the whole thing almost immediately after, became completely obsessed with it, only to have it get canceled like 8 seconds later, which sucked a lot. And the last thing that I kind of want to mention that I also started watching this year, it's not necessarily new this year, but it was new to me this year, is Succession, which is one that I could see us talking about. But also it feels like we had to have done it for its first season. Now that it's kind of in the middle of things, there's a part of me that's like, well, I guess we won't do it till it's over. I don't know. I have such like weird mixed feelings about all the shows that we talk about sort of midway, but I have genuinely been enjoying Succession. I have been avoiding Watchmen because of my like aggressively lukewarm feelings about the comic, but it is near the top of my list of things that I want to watch in 2020. I'm just mentioning it now because I've mentioned multiple HBO things, and I know somebody's going to be like, why the fuck didn't you mention Watchmen? Because I have heard nothing but wonderful things about it. So this is me acknowledging that I've heard wonderful things about it, and I will be watching it, but it's not on the list of things that I watched in 2020, or in 2019 rather. It will be on the list of things I watched in 2020.
It was very much because we got off that experience of watch. I mean, the whole point of reading the comics was then we'll watch the TV show.
Right.
Like that was the intention. And then we got off that experience of reading the comic. We had a really great conversation about it. But even after the conversation, it was like, wow, I really like, I didn't feel like I hated it as much in the moment as I did like after sitting with it and thinking about it. Like I was so, maybe hate is too strong a word, but I was definitely not interested in pursuing that world at all anymore. Right. And so I just completely ignored the TV show. And all I've heard, especially after the finale, was this was probably one of the best things in 2019. And still my brain is like, but yes, it's a 2020 goal.
It's a 2020 goal. Other things from 2019 that I loved. Movies. I just got back from being with my family. So that this is how we bond. We like go see a movie, one, because it occupies 2 hours of our time. And then because it gives us something to talk about afterwards. We yell and have strong opinions about movies, which is why I have spent my whole life preparing for this project. So we saw Little Women while yes. I was home, and it was wonderful. I have not read the book. I just got it off of my hold at the library. So I will be, I guess, probably reading it like the beginning of the year and hopefully going back to the theater again before it comes out of theaters. But oh man, I loved it so much. It was really, really wonderful. I cried a lot. Although, okay, counterpoint, I want to go back and see it in the theater, but like when I think about it, I get teary-eyed. So, do I want to go sit in the theater and sob some more? I don't know. I mean, yes, I do. But so that is also on my list of things that I loved from 2019 that we didn't talk about on the podcast. Movies are harder because movies, when we are trying to make a weekly podcast where we are consuming all of this media, if there's a movie that I want to see, and especially if there's a movie that I did see and I enjoyed, I am almost certainly going to be like, hey, we should do an episode about this, because that means you only have to watch a 2-hour movie, as opposed to if I watch a TV show that I enjoy, when I'm like, hey, you got to watch 20 hours of this TV show. So, but that is the one movie that I really loved from this year that we didn't talk about on the podcast. Booksmart too. Booksmart is also on that list.
I read Little Women when I was very young, and I had the complete experience that maybe Louisa May Alcott did not want me to have, and that was that I was upset that Joe and Laurie didn't end up together. And so, again, I was young. And so the prevailing feeling for me of Little Women was that I never read it again, and I have like negative feelings associated with the story. So I just wasn't looking forward to like watching another adaptation. But my sisters, and because I watched the trailer and I was like, wow, that would make me cry.
Right.
So that was not an experience that I was like, I want to have that right now. But my sisters were like, no, we're watching it. So they also took me along over the holiday, and I loved it. I really did enjoy it a lot. And I think that it was another one of those things that people were putting like little sections of it on Twitter and stuff, and like kind of criticizing the acting and kind of the over the topness, but that is such a disservice to what it did, because it was a little bit like over the top. But when you look at it as a whole, it definitely hits differently than if you just select a scene and then put it up on Twitter or whatnot. But I loved the way that it was, the way that, you know, they all talked over each other, yes. and kind of the family dynamics and the sister bonds, and the way it was a little bit over the top and all of their sort of energy. It really did a lot for young Maddie, who was still living in my head and making me appreciate Little Women and that story in a different way as an adult.
Yeah, the over the topness of it is, I don't know, very much part of the point. Like, I'm not going to dwell on this criticism, but yes, there were just so many things about this movie that I loved. I really enjoyed the performances. Florence Pugh is incredible. I loved all the moments of the girls sort of talking over each other, and just the like how sort of chaotic and loud the energy inside the house felt, because it felt, I don't like, I feel like anybody with a lot of siblings, like that's how it feels,
yes,
you know?
100%.
And I had this moment like watching it of feeling like that is a thing that I don't often see quite as clearly represented, in part because it's like, you know, you want to make sure that everybody hears your character's dialogue and whatnot. But like, this was very deliberate on multiple occasions. Everybody is talking at once. And, you know, I don't know. I thoroughly enjoyed that movie. I had a wonderful time at the theater. And that actually reminds me that I watched Lady Bird for the first time this year, at the very beginning of the year. So that is also on my list of 2019 movies that I mean, it's not a 2019 movie, movies that I watched in 2019 that I loved and that we did not discuss on the podcast. So as for books, I did not read 96 books. I read 55 books, which is also a high number for me. So
more than a book a week.
Yes, yes. I did the thing. I feel like I loved most of the books that I read this year. I'm kind of scrolling through my Goodreads. And again, as I said at the beginning, I reread a lot of stuff. So everything that I reread is obviously going to be on my list. Like, I wouldn't fucking reread it if I didn't know that I loved it. So those things, discounting all of those things, some of the highlights of my reading year: My Own Devices by Dessa, which you recommended to me, you, and then also Caitlin's. Independently, we're both like, you should read this book. You would really like this book. And then I read it and I was like, yes, you are right. I did really like this book. This is another one that's like that I read as an audiobook that Dessa reads herself. And it is like, there's something sort of weird about it, but also just like really, really moving and wonderful. And I loved it so, 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 so much. I feel like coming in at like the tail end of the year, I read a couple of my favorites of the year. I just finished last night All the Birds in the Sky by Charlie Jane Anders. And I'm giving it 4 stars on Goodreads, mostly because I don't, it's like, I wish that this had been a podcast episode, because it's definitely something that I want to like talk through and figure out how I feel about it. I found this book because it was on a list of like books that you should read after watching the movie Annihilation, some like weird listicle on Bustle or something like that. And I saw it and I was like, yes, like I would like, I have heard lukewarm things about Annihilation, the book, but the feeling that that movie gives me, I think I've mentioned this on the podcast before, but that is a movie that I absolutely have continued to think about a ton since we talked about it at like, you know, the beginning or middle of last year or whatever. I like that movie lives really strongly in my feelings, mostly because it like unsettled me and like gave me a ton to think about. It is a, I don't know, science fiction, fantasy. The whole sort of thing is that it's a blend of magic and science. And so the main characters are a witch, a little girl who discovers that she's a witch at the beginning of the book, and then a little boy who is super nerdy and into science and stuff. And they're both kind of outcasts in middle school, but then they go their separate ways and they meet each other again as adults. And Patricia, the girl, is now a full-on witch, and the boy is a like wunderkind engineering science nerd. I don't know. I don't really know how to explain what he does. But anyway, the point is, this book is definitely one that is not for everyone. It is really freaking weird. Like, it's very, very weird. There are lots of pieces of it where I think I could see somebody saying that like things are a little too hand wavy, but that's because the scope of all the things that Anders is including in this book is so vast that, I don't know, there's magic, like whatever, it's magic, it's fine. That's the explanation for that. This is a book that is also going to live very, very strongly in my feelings, and I'm going to be sitting with it for a while. I will absolutely wind up rereading it in the not too distant future because I just loved it so much. It was just a really delightful reading experience that I honestly cannot wait to have again. And the other book that I read at the tail end of the year that I super, super loved was Lagoon by Nnedi Okorafor, which was also on that list of like, I don't know, shit's weird books that you can read. And this is also extremely weird. I also am like unclear on how exactly to describe it. Aliens arrive on Earth and they land basically just off the coast of Lagos, Nigeria. And there are 3 characters who are sort of like swept up in the arrival of the aliens for reasons that are explored throughout the book. The aliens have, I don't know, unclear wishes. Both Lagoon and All the Birds in the Sky have kind of this like undercurrent of, I don't know, the super powerful forces of, you know, magic or whatever. The unexplained sort of super, super powerful force is a little bit trying to like reclaim the earth from us in different ways because we have not been particularly kind to it. But anyway, both of these books, Lagoon and All the Birds in the Sky, are really, really delightful and extremely weird. That's my big sort of qualifier that I will put on both of these books, that they are not for everyone. But if you are into a weird little science fiction fantasy hybrid, both of those books were great and I highly recommend them.
Okay, wait. I also had some weird books at the end of the year that were really great. I don't know why this is a thing, a pattern for us, but if you are also into weird books, Nothing to See Here by Kevin Wilson. It's short. I think it's like 270 pages and it is about basically two college roommates that for various reasons kind of lose touch. They keep in touch kind of through letters on and off until the one who is well off and she married basically a senator invites the other one to come and take care of her stepchildren. So her stepchildren recently lost their mother. And also they have this little quirk that whenever they have strong emotions that they light on fire spontaneously. And so she didn't know where to turn. So she turns to her old college roommate. And then so you kind of read about this woman who basically has not made much of herself because of something bad that happened to her, kind of find her way to taking care of these children and learning how to make sure that they don't set themselves on fire and forming a bit of a found family with them. And it is very much a snapshot book, so it's not very plot heavy. It just kind of takes you through this period of time, but it is about the found family, about having strong emotions, about how not to get stuck when bad things happen to you. So it is very symbolic and it's just so weird. And I loved it so much. Like I laughed, I cried. It was very great. And I already recommended this to Nicole, but I just finished reading yesterday, in fact, Little Weirds by Jenny Slate. And it is a part collection of essays, part memoir, but she also has some microfiction in there as well. And it is basically if you could open up Jenny Slate's like brain and just sit in there and like the loud colors and like the bright and sunshine and also the depth of her experience and just everything that she worries about and thinks about like poured into a book, that is Little Weirds. And I would not recommend it to everybody because it is very surreal and very rambling. But there were moments where I just had to stop listening to it and like take a breath because she touched on something that felt like it could have been plucked from my own experience and my own brain. And it was just so touching and moving. And also she is just such a bright and hopeful kind of person. I'm not that way sometimes. So that like living in that and like hearing her experience just made me feel good. I don't know. It was very, very, very good. And then the other one is The Deep by River Solomon and The Clipping. And it is based on a song by The Clipping. It was adapted by River Solomon. And it is basically, it takes the concept of if during the slave trade, they would oftentimes push slaves like overboard if they were sick or if they were dying or things like that. So it said, what if some of these people who went overboard actually adapted to life under the sea and became a different like race of creatures? And so they're like part mermaid living under the sea, but also they don't retain memories. They don't have like long-term memories. So they have one person in like the group of these creatures who is the memory keeper. And once a year, all of these creatures come together and the memory keeper shares with them all of the memories so that they can remember who they are. But it is obviously a very painful experience for the memory keeper. So we follow the memory keeper in this time and she basically runs away from them and from this responsibility because it's too much for her. So it's also a very short book, but it's about like shared experiences and how you both live with a history and learn from a history, but don't let the history define you. And it is just incredibly well done, super symbolic, but just in a way that you both feel for what the message is and what, you know, River Solomon is exploring, but also for the characters they created and the race and the species they created in order to express it. And if anybody is at all interested or intrigued by that, I would highly recommend that you check that out.
The last two things that I want to really quickly mention are two other sort of nonfiction books that I read this year that I particularly enjoyed. Patti Smith's Just Kids really, really wonderful. It's a memoir, and it's specifically a memoir that she wrote about her relationship with Robert Mapplethorpe. It's about her life, but it is specifically about her life where it intersects with his. So it's a memoir, but it's also like a grief memoir. And there's, I don't know, there's a lot about this book that I genuinely loved and adored. I also recently read The Personality Brokers by Merve Emre. The full title is The Personality Brokers, The Strange History of Myers-Briggs and the Birth of Personality Testing. And it is exactly what it sounds like, although I was surprised, I shouldn't have been, but I was surprised by how much sort of sociology was woven in there. I was expecting it to be more kind of straight history than it actually was. And I thoroughly enjoyed it. It left me with a kind of newly sour feeling towards all manner of personality typing and stuff. So that was the one kind of pitfall of this experience. But I really, really did enjoy it. And it's one of those things where I'm like, I want everyone to read it so we can all be on the same page about the feelings that I now have. So those are all my sort of major recommendations of books that I read in 2019. Okay, so we have spent a good amount of time gushing, and now it is time to yell about stuff. So what were some of the things that you hated in 2019? And I guess we will go back through the list in the same order, starting with podcast stuff. What was the worst of the stuff that we consumed for the podcast this year?
Game of Thrones, season 8. I'm still so mad.
Yep. My brother and I were talking about it at Christmas and at Thanksgiving too, actually. Like, he mentioned something about it and I like got wound up and I don't know, went off on a like really annoyingly long rant. Nobody cares. But I like had this moment of, oh, I really thought that like I had moved on with my life because I haven't really thought about it at all. But then the moment I am asked to think about it even a little bit, all that I feel is rage.
Yes. I saw a tweet about it today and I didn't agree with the tweet. It was basically comparing season 8 to The Rise of Skywalker, which I don't agree with that sentiment. But in the tweet, he basically, the way that he phrased it was that season 8 of Game of Thrones was a destination which invalidated the journey. And so like you can't even enjoy how we got there because the ending was so bad. And I was like, yes, I feel that because I literally like, I'm like you, I have not really thought about it. I like got it out of my brain. Something that I spent so much time with and that I really at times enjoyed a lot, like I have not thought about a lot, but anytime someone happens to mention Game of Thrones, all of the feelings are still there bubbling underneath at how badly they fumbled the ending of that. And not even from a perspective of like how the plots ended, but just the storytelling, all of the writing, all of the mechanics. Ugh, it was so terrible. Obviously, we talked about it for a full podcast, but all of the feelings are there. Also bad for me this year, The Umbrella Academy. Again, not one that I thought about a lot since then, but it was especially bad at the moment because people liked it so much.
Yes.
And
yes.
So like at every turn, there was somebody like, that was amazing. And I had to like question if we watched the same thing because I truly hated so many aspects of it.
Well, and especially now when everybody is putting their kind of best of lists, like I am reminded of my hate for the Umbrella Academy because it's on some people's best of 2019 list and it makes me irrationally angry. I recognize that people can love what they love and that's fine. And like, I am absolutely never going to come into someone's mentions and tell them that the thing that they loved is bad. However, on the safe space of our podcast where you have signed up to hear my opinions, that is a bad take to put.
That is a bad take.
It is a bad take to put The Umbrella Academy on the best of 2019.
Watchmen, we mentioned already, the graphic novel itself. Again, there were probably things that while I was reading it, I was more appreciative of, like of the style and, you know, the way that it used being a graphic novel or the format to benefit its storytelling. But in retrospect, all I remember is how much I hated it.
Yes.
So that is the prevailing feeling that I will carry with me. Is that me and Watchmen do not get along. Finally, some of the Pirates of the Caribbean. Maybe, I don't know if that is, it's almost, It's bad and not quite as an aggressive way as some of these other things on this list, but that whole experience was wild to me, honestly.
The fourth and fifth Pirates of the Caribbean movies are absolutely on my list of worst things of 2019. Yeah.
Great.
Worst experiences I voluntarily had in 2019, for sure. Watching the fourth and fifth Pirates of the Caribbean movies is on that list.
I kind of went back and forth on whether or not this belonged there, but I also have like similar bad feelings when I think about it. Endgame, it was a mixed experience, but again, it's one that I walked away with a lot of just bad feelings. It might have been the way that we consumed it too was like, you know, a lot.
That one lives less poorly in my feelings the more distance I get from it. Mm. I understand why it would be on your list, but it is not on mine. Like, it's also obviously not on my best of the year list, but it has fallen to a more kind of solidly middling place for me. I otherwise would agree with basically that entire list. That's really all the things I was going to say. The fucking season 8 of Game of Thrones was
so bad.
So bad. Never gonna be over it, apparently. The Umbrella Academy was so upsetting. Yeah, the Umbrella Academy was upsetting in part because of how much everybody loved it. Like, I think that if other people had hated it, I'd have been like, yeah, fine. It was bad. And then
we all agree
it was bad. And then we move on. But it was one of those things where, like, seeing people constantly talk about how much they loved it was like, am I losing my mind? Like, what is happening here? But the other thing I want to mention, and it's funny that I am the one who is mentioning it because I was doing my darndest to prop it up while we were talking about it. But I, with some time and distance, have to concede that it was objectively fucking terrible, is Slayer by Kirsten White.
Oh yeah.
I worked so hard. I mean, I gave it 2 stars originally, so like, I didn't say it was good even when we talked about it, but it was more a thing of trying to be like, no, it's not the worst, it's just bad. But I can have now come around and agree that it is indeed the worst.
I gave it 2 stars too.
I bumped it down. I recently did a video wrapping up all the books that I did in April. Yes, you heard that right. I recently, in December, did this. I like got to Slayer on the list, and I was thinking about it and having to talk about it. I was like, no, this is not a 2-star book. This is a fucking 1-star book. I hate this book. So that is why I have to mention it now.
Maybe I did not mention it and it's still at 2 stars because I literally have not thought about it again.
Yes. If I had also, I also had not thought about it again, but because I made this video like about the books that I read in April, I had to think about it again, and being forced to think about it again reminded me that I was like, when asked to think about it again, I couldn't even remember what the things that I had liked about it were. The one or two things that let me give it the extra star were gone from my heart and memory.
As a little special shout out of worst things of the year, I just have to say Raylo. In general. It was one of the worst things of my year in media. Not even Rise of Skywalker, like, it was fine, but Raylo, awful.
Yeah, I would agree. Raylo, well, it's like that's a media experience that isn't just Rise of Skywalker. Like, it is also the fact that we had to watch them kiss in Rise of Skywalker, and I wish that had never happened to me, but it did. But it's the like year of, yes, all of the tweets. Really, Raylo on Twitter is mostly, yes, what I...
I just had to experience a tweet thread about, like, let us have this. And I was like, why are we still doing this? Why is this still part of the discourse? I don't know. Like, fine if you want to ship Raylo, but I don't understand why we're still talking about it in a way that is, like, defending it. I don't know. Just... be quiet with your Raylo love is how I feel. probably people are like, you need to be quiet with your Raylo hate. Yeah, but it can't because it's awful. And I've already declared 2020 the year that I feel like everybody should stop standing evil white man in fiction. That's, yes. That's my goal for everyone else.
Have you seen any of Penn Badgley's press stuff for You?
Yes.
Because nobody wants you to hate Penn Badgley's character in You more than Penn Badgley. And
it, honestly,
I live for it. I love it so much.
I love his commitment to reminding us over and over again that you are watching a murderer. Right. Like, he murders people.
I've only seen like one. I think I watched maybe two episodes before. I was like, I can't. This is not for me. And I didn't watch any more of it. But I absolutely will watch every single bit of Penn Badgley promotional material for You. I love it. I love it. It's, that's also on my list of favorite media of 2019. Penn Badgley promoting You.
Some other things that I hated, they're also going to be books. I really, really, really hated Ninth House by Leigh Bardugo, which was a big deal this year because it's her first adult book. It was one of those experiences that I knew that I was going to hate it, like right from the beginning, but I pushed through mostly because everybody was talking so well of it. And everybody, It was one of those things that I started to be like, you know, update, like, I'm not enjoying this. And people were like, no, push past the first 50 pages, it gets better. And after 50 pages, I was like, I still don't like this. And somebody would be like, no, it's the first 100. I got up to somebody say, after the first 250 pages, it really takes off. I'm not kidding you. So, plot twist, I didn't enjoy any of the pages. It is about secret societies at Yale, and a girl, it has like magic in it. So there's this girl who can see ghosts. And so they really covet that, I don't know, ability. And even though she didn't finish high school, they bring her to Yale to go to college, join the secret societies and work for them. And it was just poorly written. It was misogynistic. Said some really weird things about like sexual assault and surviving sexual assault. And then it put its main character, a biracial main character, in really weird situations where it was like she was the mystical minority. She didn't finish high school and she was being brought to college. So it had that whole feeling of like, you know, she's taking the place of somebody more deserving, and just some really, I don't know, overall strange messages that I don't think Bardugo intended, but that she surely baked into her story. So I hated all of it, and I gave it 1 star. This was also the year that we finished reading and recapping After on Snark Squad. I think that took us longer than anything we had ever recapped ever. It took like 3 years to get through that book. It was 99 chapters, I believe, 98 or 99. And it was a painful experience from page one. And then the movie came out this year or last year. I watched it this year on Netflix. I think I have to celebrate like the end of reading the book.
Celebrate.
Yeah. Quote unquote. So yeah, that was just it was awful. And so people will always ask, like, was it worse, better or worse than like Twilight or 50 Shades? Because those are the books that we've covered in the same way on Snark Squad. And they're all like equally bad, but in different ways. I feel like this was particularly bad because it was not like vampires like Twilight or like, you know, Playboy millionaire, like fantasy-esque, like 50 Shades. It was just two college kids being awful to each other. And so there was just like this reality to it, this realness to this like abusive relationship that, I don't know, made it even worse to read about. And there was no element of fantasy to like pretend like it was a plot. Like, it was just honestly chapters and chapters of these two college kids fighting with each other and making up. I always say the worst one is the one that I'm reading right now. And that one was the most recent one that I read. So I think After might be worse, but I don't know. Catch me after some time has passed. And the other worst book that I read was A Discovery of Witches by Deborah Harkness. We are covering the TV show on Snark Squad right now, but it is about a witch who falls in love with a vampire. So I find it really fascinating, all the lore. And I know that a lot of times I will end up hating it, but it's almost like a thing now where I'm like, is this going to be one that I end up loving or hating? Because I think vampires as a concept can be interesting. So I went into this one just kind of knowing that people talked well about it. And as soon as I put my first Goodreads update up, somebody was like, you realize this is the grown-up Twilight, right? And I was like, oh no, what have I done? It was just really so insipid. It was like plot light. And it was another one of those like alpha male vampires who was like telling our main character what to do. And it was also very much in the vein of like, it kept saying that the main character was like super strong and independent, but it didn't show any of that. And it built up this huge world and all of this lore in the first few chapters to then ignore that completely. And then we had like endless scenes of them doing like vampire yoga and I don't know, him running around and killing animals to drink their blood and stuff. And I was like, wow, this is awful. So I do not recommend that one.
I feel like most of the worst things that I consumed were things for the podcast. So like we've covered most of what I hated. The only other thing that I haven't mentioned that jumps out to me is, and I feel bad about saying it, but I read Nora Ephron's Heartburn this year and had such high hopes because I love Nora Ephron, but I really, really did not enjoy this book at all. It is, I believe, semi-autobiographical about when Nora Ephron's husband left her, but the main character who is kind of narrating her way through this divorce is like really insufferable. I don't know. It's like listening to this woman who kind of sucks complain about things, and like the circumstances that she is in suck. Like her husband sucks, but I don't know, like the fact that her husband sucks isn't enough for me to care about her, this character. So I don't know. That was thoroughly disappointing. This book came out in 1983, so before she wrote most of the screenplays that of hers that I truly love. This has also been adapted into a movie that like she adapted into a movie, and maybe I would love the movie version of this. I believe it's like Meryl Streep and Jack Nicholson maybe playing the two characters. I might be wrong about that, but I have not seen the movie. Kind of want to watch it to see if I like the movie more. I think my main takeaway is like I am not interested in reading Nora Ephron novels, but will stan her screenplays forever. So that was my one of my most disappointing reads of 2019.
The only other thing that I kind of wanted to touch on in looking back through our year is, do you feel like there were any themes or anything like throughout our media consumption? Or maybe I'll just share with you what I thought like came up maybe a lot towards the end of the year, but that like now sticks out as my 2019, like when I'm looking back on our media. But it's like, let us have this, I think was like the rallying cry of some of the media that we watch, especially towards the end of the year. And just like that idea of, you know, things that were made for certain audiences and understanding them and like learning, letting that teach you kind of how to consume it. And then also just like enjoying media that is for women and made by women, and kind of seeing how the media or like other critics take that apart and understanding how that feeds into my own like consumption of that thing. But I don't know. In my head, 2019 will live on as the year of let me have this.
I totally agree with that. But I also want to, I don't know, elaborate a little bit because you earlier were talking about the Raylo thing. And I do just want to like be a little bit more specific about what that what it is that we are asking you to let us have.
Correct.
When we look back on, you know, 2019, because the thing is like, the strain of criticism that I feel when I think about Raylo versus the strain of criticism that I'm pushing back on when I say, let us have the Charlie's Angels reboot are two very, very different things. Like the criticism about the Charlie's Angels reboot is mostly a lot of, I don't know, this is underwritten or this is cheesy or tropey or whatever. It's construction related things, I guess, is the simplest way that I can think of to describe it, though you might have a better kind of way of saying the thing that I'm trying to get at right now. Whereas the Raylo piece of it is like, there is something that I find actively sort of harmful about this thing.
Correct.
You know, like there is something like I think I am deeply unsettled by the constant churn of discourse around stanning evil white men in a way that is, you know, gestures wildly at the whole fucking world. Like, that is just not a thing that I'm here for. I'm having a hard time articulating this, but the short version is basically that, like, those are two different things. There are two different things going on there.
Thank you for, like, pointing that out, because I hadn't even thought that I had said, let me have this in regards to Raylo, like, as a bad thing. And then I'm here, like, championing that as well. But I think that it's different to come up against someone saying this is actually harmful and here's why, and saying let me have that harm, versus like somebody saying like we don't need another Charlie's Angels, and me saying let me have this media for women, because it is like, you know what I mean, like let me have this like fun experience kind of thing. But and I think that that is the distinction of like when you're talking about something that is pernicious or something that is harmful, and then ignoring that because of wherever you're coming from in your privilege, it doesn't affect you, or you don't see the way that it affects other people as a whole, versus like you not appreciating some elements of like plot, story construction or whatever,
right,
and other people appreciating it. I think that is definitely two very different things.
One last thing that I kind of want to throw out there as a way to end this episode. We talk a lot kind of between us about our different feelings about various sort of episodes of the podcast. So we've been talking about all the media itself, but what was your favorite episode of the podcast that we did this year?
I feel like I have two, but I think the one is one you're going to pick. So I'll go with
the other. I also have two. I picked two in my head and I'm like, okay, whichever one she doesn't say.
But I'm going to go with Daisy Jones and the Six, which, ooh, our guests were Devin and Kat.
That wasn't one of mine.
Okay. So I think I really liked that conversation because it truly made me understand like my feelings on the book on a different way. And there are like several points that were brought up during the conversation that it were just like, I don't know, like in the moment I was like, oh my God, yes, exactly. Uh-huh. And those are always the conversations that I really enjoy, is when I go into the book, either when it's like something media that I have already very strong feelings about and I could like write an entire thesis about, or media where I'm kind of hazy and I don't know what I feel about this thing, and through the conversation I figure it out. And so this was definitely like a book that I enjoyed, but I felt like something was off. And then in talking with you and Devin and Kat, like I figured it out by the end. And that was really, it was great.
What was the other one? Now I want to know.
The other one was the Night Circus, which is the other experience of like, we came to that, all three of us. Sam was the guest there, and we had like really strong feelings. And it was like media that we had already consumed and reconsumed. So it was just like a more like in-depth conversation than we have when we just like recently consume a thing and just kind of like blurt out all of our first feelings. Like these were feelings that were like sitting and that we've had for a while. So I loved that book, and getting to experience it again and then talk to you guys about it made it one of my favorites. Was that one of yours?
Yes, that was one of my two. So, I was expecting you to say that one. So the other one that I had sort of singled out was the Americans episode for essentially all of those exact same reasons, right? Like it was revisiting a thing, and that I think had the added bonus of all three of us in the conversation being at very different places with it, which that's also a thing that I find that I really enjoy. So like, you know, I had seen the show all the way through and then I rewatched the whole thing. Joey had seen the show all the way through and then kind of rewatched disjointed episodes. I think you ended up rewatching a solid chunk of it, but not the whole thing. And then you had just recently watched the whole thing very, very quickly. So like that combination of experiences also led to a somewhat similar phenomenon to the one that you're describing that we had in the Night Circus and also Daisy Jones, where there were just a lot of different little things that people were bringing up that affected my kind of dynamic with the thing. I also have to give sort of an honorable mention to all three of the Historic Materials episodes, because Connor brought things to that experience that I had never considered. I like just things about his experience with those books were things that I was like, huh, that is a new bit of like, you know, interpretation or insight or whatever that I hadn't really considered before. So there's a lot I could go on. I love all of them really, but those things stand out. So the very last thing before we end this episode is a bit of like housekeeping, I guess, to say that this is our final weekly episode of the podcast, or at least for the foreseeable future. So we are moving to Mondays and bi-weekly. So what that means is that Snark Squad will be uploading a podcast episode every Monday, except for this coming Monday, and we will be alternating Cooler Than Homework and Snark Squad pod episodes. Trying to do this podcast weekly and Cooler Than Homework at the same time has gotten to be kind of a lot. And also, kind of building off of everything that we've just been saying about our favorite episodes, we both got to a place where it seemed like trying to cram all the things in wasn't really working, and it wasn't really serving the kinds of conversations that we wanted to have. I'd been sort of pushing for this bi-weekly thing for a bit, and The King, when Rory was watching The King,
it broke me.
It broke her. She was resistant to the idea, but then she was like, why the fuck am I watching this movie? I would not have watched it for any other reason than because it was like, you know, we need to have stuff on the schedule. And like, I don't know, I just, going back to my sort of thing at the top about getting to a place where I'm less inclined to sign myself up for experiences that I don't think I will enjoy, like, I just, I'm done. Like, I'm done going out of my way trying to stuff the calendar. So in 2020, we will be moving to Mondays and bi-weekly episodes. So that's the little bit of housekeeping that I wanted to end this on. And I guess on that note, that brings us to the end of this episode of the podcast, our very first episode of 2020 / our last recording of 2019. Thank you so much for listening. There's no guest for me to thank, but if you are, thank you. You are all our guest, really, on every episode you're listening to us. Thank you so much for doing that. And if you are enjoying this podcast, we would love it if you considered joining our community on Patreon at patreon.com/snarksquad. We are going to be doing more kind of like live stream stuff. We would also love it if you would rate and review us on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher, or tell your friends about the show. That's really the big one. There will be a post dedicated to this episode up on snarksquad.com. You can tell us all of your favorite things from 2019, or you can find us all on Twitter at @snark_squad. I am at Sweeney Says.
You can find me at My Name Is Muddiness.
This show is a Snark Squad production, edited by me, and the music is by Stefan Chin. And we will be back in your feed again in 2.5 weeks. Bye.